It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome back to the Bama Online Podcast. This one on Monday afternoon, September the 13th, 2021. Travis Ryer and Charlie Potter, your friendly, accessible BOL staff members here with you on the latest edition of the Bama Online Podcast. The Alabama Crimson Tide coming off a 48-14 win over the FCS Mercer Bears last Saturday at Bryant-Denny Stadium officially shift their attention fully. May have been diverted a little bit even last week based on some of the things we heard from Nick Saban, but it is officially Florida week. The SEC opener for the Alabama Crimson Tide should be a challenge going on the road to take on a 2-0 Florida team that has been exceptionally explosive on the offensive side of the ball. Are you ready, Charlie? Are you ready for the start of SEC play?
I am, hydrating right now because I know how hot it's going to be down in Gainesville. I will say that was one of the beauties of Saturday's game at Bryant-Denny. I think most people know that the press box has since been moved from the one side of the stadium on the 50 to the corner of the other, kind of right behind the visiting section. And last year, it was hot in the press box. It's closed, but once it gets about 1 p.m., the sun's just in your face the rest of the game. But they've tinted the windows. They've done some painting to kind of help not reflect the sun as much. And I didn't think I would say this, but it almost got a little chilly in the press box.
Oh, my goodness.
Saturday. I don't think that'll be the case in Gainesville. I've never been, so this will be my first trip down to the swamp. But I am nonetheless, regardless of what happens, I'm expecting it to be hot, to be balmy, and I'm hydrated to gear up for it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's still the case at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, but used to be one of those open air press boxes that was really cool. And yeah, you could get a little hot on the September afternoons in that scenario, but you were not looking into the sun as best I recall. Not sure where they're at with that facility these days, but it has been a cool place to catch games in the past, not so much from a weather perspective. Some of the very hottest games I've attended involved the Florida Gators. One with Florida in Steve Spurrier's debut season as head coach of the Gators, 1990. Florida traveled to Bryant-Denny Stadium back when Alabama still had the artificial turf, not even field turf, artificial turf. And it was brutally hot for a early kickoff that day. And then 1986, Alabama, Mike Shula, then the starting quarterback for Alabama. That was like an early afternoon kick back in 86. Gosh, what's that, 35 years ago now? Really dating myself. That was a brutally hot game. But, you know, some of the weather forecasts right now showing 60% chance of rain on Saturday. So maybe some unwanted precipitation. We'll talk about that more as we move throughout the week. What we want to talk with you first and foremost about, Charlie, is an update that we got from Nick Saban during his Monday news conference. The collective breath of the Alabama fan base was being restrained until we heard from Nick Saban in regards to Will Anderson. Will, of course, took a bit of a cut block from Mercer in that win on Saturday, limped off the field, ended up going to the locker room facility, and there were some rumblings. And then we heard from Nick Saban post-game. What did we hear from Nick Saban that made you think maybe we'll see the usual Will Anderson on Saturday in Gainesville?
Yeah, I mean, he came out in his opening statement and said that, what they've seen from Will's been very encouraging. And I think, like you said, the fan base kind of breathed a collective sigh of relief. And, he said he's probably going to take the day off today, which, that's not that surprising. And then he'll be day to day moving forward. But overall, they feel more comfortable, a little more encouraged than they did after the game. And they're going to see how he progresses throughout the course of the week. That's, you know, just typical Saban banter when he talks about injuries. But it is encouraging because, you know, he did limp off the field, went to the sideline medical tent. But it was good to see him walk off under his own power. He walked to the locker room really with no noticeable limp, although he was flanked by what looked like every member of Alabama's training staff. And, you know, that's to be expected given the caliber of player that he is. But it looks like Alabama dodged a bullet. And, you know, with the injury to Chris Allen, you know, that's already a big blow. And if Will Anderson was set to miss any amount of time, that's playing some inexperienced players off the edge, you know, when you're getting into SEC play. So that's less than ideal. But we'll see how it goes throughout the week. You know, we'll hear from Nick Saban again Wednesday morning and Wednesday night. And then I'm sure, you know, he'll get asked about it on his radio show come Thursday. So we'll probably get plenty more Will Anderson updates throughout the week. But I think a lot of fans were very encouraged by the encouraging prognosis that Nick Saban delivered earlier today.
What about a couple of other defensive starters for Alabama? Two corners that missed Saturday's game against Mercer. Sounds like the practice week might get off to an active start for those guys as well.
Yeah. You know, Josh Jobe and Jalen Armour Davis, you know, weren't in uniform on Saturday. So we saw Marcus Banks and Kool-Aid McKinstry make their first career starts. So I thought both of those guys actually played pretty well, all things considered. But, you know, Nick Saban said after the game that they held those guys out. Their injuries were a little more severe than they anticipated, and the fact that they were probably going to give it a go, but they just decided to hold them out. But they're expected to practice today, which is a good sign. You know, they're going to you know, see where they are in practice, see how they progress over the course of the week, things like that. But, you know, he was optimistic after the game that those guys would be back. And it sounds like that optimism has continued. But again, I think it's encouraging that both Kool-Aid and Marcus Banks played well. Both guys got a pick in the game. They're going to obviously see stiffer competition if they're still to be out there. But I think that experience will benefit them moving forward.
So all in all, coming out of the game, other than Will Anderson, which is like saying, well, you know, other than Mike Trout for the Angels, Anaheim came out of it in pretty good shape, or L.A., whatever they go by these days. This team looks to be in decent health, as you've noted in some previous podcasts and for us there at BamaOnline.com. Not a team that's totally been avoided, nicks and bumps and bruises, but I guess relatively speaking, in decent shape.
I would say so. You know, it was good to see DeMarco Helms back on the field in Saturday's home opener. He played well at the safety spot opposite of Jordan Battle. And, you know, it was interesting to see kind of how the secondary shook out, because we saw Brian Branch maintain that spot at the star while Malachi Moore was kind of the backup safety behind the two starters. And that goes to show the preseasons that Battle, Helms, and Branch have all put together collectively. I think that's more of the job they've done than the job that Malachi Moore hasn't done. So, you know, that was a good one. You know, for the most part, I think everybody else is good to go. We've seen some guys that haven't practiced or haven't been available in games. Shane Lee's been out of uniform in the first two games. You know, he's someone that's been dealing with injury throughout the preseason. Nick Saban said that Kamar Wheaton is dealing with an injury. He didn't disclose exactly what, but I think it occurred in one of the scrimmages earlier in the preseason. We haven't seen him yet. You know, Major Tennyson, Caden Clark weren't dressed for the game, and, you know, that kind of cut down the tight end position. But we've seen more of Jahlil Billingsley. And then I think another big one is LeBryan Ray. I think the defensive line had played well. But, you know, if you can get a healthy LeBryan Ray out there, he can give you some more pass rush and make up for some of the loss that you have at outside linebackers. So, yeah, that's pretty much, you know, off the top of my head, the guys that are dealing with things. But all things considered, and given, like we just talked about, the prognosis for Will Anderson at this point in the week, it's pretty good for Alabama.
So let's go around this Alabama football team as it prepares to enter, or has entered, Florida week, a big one, no doubt about that. And let's start on the offensive side of the ball with the quarterback position. I know Nick, during his Monday news conference, was asked a couple of times about Bryce Young and where he's at and his development, how he feels about Bryce going into his not only first SEC start, but first SEC road start this week down in Gainesville. And based on the comments from Saban, he continues to echo what we heard even leading up to the Miami game, that it seems like, Charlie, in Nick Saban's mind, the quarterback position on his list of concerns for the offense isn't as high as some people might think. He's got some other positions, it sounds like, that he would like to see continue to elevate its play. All in all, Nick, and I'm sure part of this too is you want to keep your quarterback psyche in a good place, especially when he's just a second-year player. Nick sounds pretty confident in what he's got with Bryce going into to Florida week.
Yeah, he does. And that's been the drumbeat really since the spring. I don't know if that's just trying to continue to pump Bryce with confidence. I don't think that's something he's lacking necessarily. But he's continued to have nothing but good things to say about Bryce. And I did ask him, you know, just what you tell your quarterback going into his first road start, because yes, Bryce is going into his second year, but this will be the first time he's on the road in front of a full crowd, because last year you had limited capacity stadiums due to the pandemic. But, you know, he just talked about you're playing with poise, but that's one thing that Bryce has done in both games is be able to keep his poise and stay focused on the things that they want him to do. So, you know, again, he's continued to have good things to say about Bryce. You know, he came up earlier today as well and said what you would expect him to say, you know, talk about how important preparation is this week and, you know, getting communication down, because they are expecting it to be a hostile environment. But yeah, I mean, continue to have good things to say about Bryce. And I assume you're probably going to ask about it, but he even talked about the backup quarterback position and, you know, getting those guys experience in both of the games they played so far. And, you know, he was outright asked who is the backup quarterback behind Bryce Young. And he said right now it's Paul Tyson being the second guy, and Jalen Milroe is a little bit of a developmental guy, but he's doing the things that he does well on the field. And that's clearly running the football. So I think all three guys bring a different skill set, and you know, they continue to want to get the backup some experience, because if something happens to Bryce hypothetically down the road, you know, they can maybe use both of them, because Paul Tyson's been effective as a passer. And we've seen, you know, in the Mercer game, what Jalen Milroe can do with his legs. So it's a roundup of where things stand at the quarterback position right now.
Yeah, it sounds, or it seems, as if something, God forbid, did happen to Bryce Young that put him on the shelf for an extended stretch, you might almost have to use both those quarterbacks if you wanted to try to continue to access the full offensive scheme, the full playbook. Because their respective skill sets and even where each is at in their development is a little bit different, a good bit different, to be honest with you. And so to keep as much as possible in play on the offensive side of the ball, it might require something more along a two quarterback system, which we certainly have not seen in the Nick Saban era. Here's a little stat for you. Alabama, under Nick Saban, has started 6 first-year starters at quarterback in matchups against Dan Mullen coach teams at both Mississippi State and Florida. Of course, Dan Mullen yet to record a win against Alabama as a head coach at either Mississippi State or Florida. So I guess you're not surprised to learn that Alabama's 6-0 in those games with first-year starters at quarterback against Dan Mullen. Bryce Young going to try to make it 7-0 on Saturday. Running back position, Charlie. Nick Saban was asked about that spot again. And look, I'm guessing if you're the Florida Gators, anybody but Najee Harris on Saturday will be just fine, right? If you're Ventrell Miller, you're that Florida defense. You just do not want to see anybody in number 22, because that will go down and continues to go down as one of the greatest individual performances in Alabama football history, what Najee Harris did against the Gators in Atlanta back in December. But with this group, you know, Nick pointed out some things he'd like to see improved upon during his Monday news conference. And did you detect anything from Saturday's game that might indicate they're starting to try to figure out a more defined approach at the position?
Maybe a little. Yeah, I mean, I think Brian Robinson's played well in both games. And, you know, last game, I think he averaged 7 yards a carry. He's been running hard. And, again, you know, we've talked about it when previewing the season. He's not the guy that's going to be the receiver out of the backfield. He had a drop in the game, and that's just not his strong suit. But when you need tough yards, Brian Robinson's going to be the guy to give it to you. And then, you know, Jace McClellan's more of an all-around back, and Nick Saban said as much, you know, in recent weeks. And, you know, he said that Jace played really well in the game, and he did. He scored three different touchdowns three different ways, you know, via special teams, as a runner, and as a receiver. And I think, you know, the other backs can bring that as well. Trey Sanders is someone that, as he continues to get healthy and comfortable, can be that kind of dual threat out of the backfield as a runner and a receiver. And, you know, Roydell Williams, you know, he's, you know, Nick Saban's pointed out the fumbles he's had, and that's always going to get a running back in the doghouse. But I think with Brian and Jace, and as Trey gets healthy, that's going to kind of be the trio they'll use and run out there. And, you know, Nick Saban's talked about it all offseason long, and even today. You know, he's pleased with what the running backs are doing. I think the running game as a whole, they want to see more of them late in games to be able to milk the clock and, you know, take the air out of the ball. You know, but I think teams are also noticing that's what they want to do. And, you know, they're stacking the box and trying to take it away from them. So overall, I think they're pleased with what the running backs are brought to the table. But you're right. You're starting to get more of defined roles from those guys, and maybe what we'll see moving forward.
Wide receivers and tight ends. Continuation of Cam Latou is the top tight end in that rotation. It was a UA debut for Robbie Oots on Saturday against Mercer. We sort of projected that to be in the not too distant future after he didn't see the field against Miami in the opener. Jahlil Billingsley we saw earlier in the game Saturday, Charlie, but how much do you think that had to do with Major Tennyson not being available for Mercer? Or do you think this is what we've kind of been working toward all along?
I think it's maybe a little of both, because you're right. I mean, Major Tennyson wasn't in uniform. There wasn't a reason given for that. But, you know, I think Billingsley is digging his way out of the hole that he's been in. And, you know, he's a guy that has experience against Florida and is obviously a new team. But, yeah, he's someone that could be a valuable asset down in Gainesville along with Cameron Latou. We didn't see the tight ends really get involved much in the Mercer game, but, you know, we saw Kendall Randolph used quite a bit as that sixth offensive lineman, that pseudo tight end. Latou was used quite a bit as well. And Billingsley, like you said, got in the game earlier. I think it has to do, though, a little with Major Tennyson, but also, again, the maturation and the progress of him and his situation. So, you know, if they can get Billingsley back on track and, you know, being a consistent performer in this offense, I think that'll help out Bryce Young and company.
Wide receiver, it wasn't the greatest of starts to the game against Mercer for Jameson Williams. He had a drop. He had a personal foul not long thereafter. Yes, it appeared as if he was baited pretty good by the Mercer defensive back. But I guess with Trayshawn going, with Jameson going to the sideline early, we did see Trayshawn Holden come onto the field there for a little bit in the first quarter. But, you know, ultimately it seems as if JoJo Earl is the guy that we continue to hear more and more and see more and more things from as we get a couple of 3 weeks into this season. The importance of that, Charlie, to go along with a proven guy and John Mechie and some of the good things you've seen from Jameson Williams so far this season.
Yeah, I think whenever he's composed and not playing emotional, you know, Jameson Williams is obviously a big part of this offense. And he calmed down and he scored a touchdown in the game. And, you know, he was the third leading receiver in terms of receptions and yards. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is going to continue to be, you know, a key asset for Bryce Young to work with. And I think with, you know, Jameson Williams and John Mechie, those are really the first two receivers that Nick Saban's mentioned for a long time now. And, you know, those are the top two guys. I think with, you know, Jameson going out because of, you know, losing his helmet, losing his cool, we've seen that Trayshawn Holden is kind of that next man up as a split end. And, you know, that's not all that surprising. I think some people wonder about maybe a Javon Baker. I know people are still, you know, wanting to see more of a Jai Hall, but you know, Trayshawn Holden has a good rapport with Bryce Young, and I think he's progressed pretty well this offseason. But yeah, I mean, if it wasn't clear before, it's clear now that JoJo Earl is going to be a big part of this offense, and he's going to continue to push Slade Bolden. Slade is a reliable target, both as a receiver and as a return man. But you know, JoJo Earl, you don't really hear Nick Saban make comparisons very often, but you know, last week on his radio show, he pulled out the Jalen Waddle card.
He went straight Waddle.
Yeah. And you know, that's not very you know, customary for him to do. So I think that says a lot about what they see in JoJo, the potential that he has. And you know, he's a guy that had 85 receiving yards, you know, mixed with the punt returns he had later in the game. He led all players in all purpose yards with 130. So I think we'll just continue to see what Nick Saban called little number 10 out there and making a big contribution.
Didn't have a tight end with a catch in the game against Mercer. And again, understanding you watch the game real time, and even if you watch it a second time, Alabama was as basic formationally, schematically, personnel groupings. That was sort of an A-day approach to a fall game plan against an FCS opponent. So not going to show everything. And again, we talk about that in relation to Jahlil Billingsley. Yeah, this week might not be a bad week to get Jahlil going a little bit there in the passing game. What about the offensive line, Charlie? Again, similar to just the passing game in general, not the best of starts to the game against Mercer with a sack given up on the first third down for Alabama. Nick Saban was asked specifically on Monday about Darian Daucourt and Chris Owens at the center and right tackle positions, respectively. Some Alabama fans, let's face it, we're on the roundtable message board a good bit, and they would love to see some alterations, I guess we could say, to maybe that starting lineup. I'm just not sure if on the road at Florida in week three is the time you want to do that.
No, I mean, Florida has just as many sacks as Alabama does through the first two games, and Zachary Carter has been effective for them with three sacks. So they're going to be facing a talented and pretty veteran defensive front down there in Gainesville. And I think with having a 6th-year senior like Chris Owens, you probably keep him in the lineup for that. It was interesting to see, you know, what happened when Chris Owens lost his helmet, because in the first game we saw J.C. Latham come in. I think Chris needs to probably tighten up that chin strap a little bit, but it was Damian George off the bench, and we know from Nick Saban, after the first game, that Damian George wasn't available for the Miami game, or at least they didn't utilize him. But he was the first guy off the bench there, so I still think we're seeing J.C. Latham get a little comfortable. He played some right guard in the second half whenever the twos got in the game. So they're still kind of mixing and matching there. But Nick Saban said that both Daucourt and Owens have done a fairly decent job just in terms of their execution. Both players, of course, would say they had things to clean up. And the thing that they've tried to focus on is improvement and development. And they want to establish and develop more depth on that offensive line. They were able to do that a little bit in Saturday's game. Maybe not the case going into the Florida game, but I don't really think this is, like you said, I agree with you. I don't think this is the time to really be mixing things up going into a hostile environment where communication up front is going to be key. So having guys like Evan Neal and Chris Owens on the outside with some guys that have played well in Ekior and Cohen in the interior, I think having that group that's been together will be key going into a loud and hostile environment.
Yeah, people always talk about, well, they got a first-year starter going on the road for the first time, and Bryce Young. No one says anything about a first-year starter at center going on the road with him, and this guy's got to make line calls and checks and identify fronts and do all that on Saturday against what you alluded to there, a capable Florida defensive line that, you're right, I think Zachary Carter is the guy that you're most interested in this year, because he is one of those guys that early downs, you could very well see him against Evan Neal at defensive end. And then in obvious pass rush situations, much like we see Alabama do with their defensive ends, like a Jonathan Allen and others, like to get him inside on those guards, you know, maybe Javion Cohen, maybe Emil Ekior. So some different looks coming for Alabama this week and some capable guys. Brenton Cox Jr. on the edge for Florida. It's been more hype than production to this point, but he's certainly a talented, talented dude that Chris Owens, assuming he's still in place there at right tackle, figures to see a pretty good bit on Saturday. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here on the Bama Online podcast. When we come back, Charlie Potter and myself, we're going to go over to the defensive side of the ball. We'll get into some special teams as well. The latest State of the Tide edition of the Bama Online podcast. Back with more of the show right after this.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Back with more of the Bama Online podcast on a Monday afternoon, September the 13th. 2021. Charlie, in the first half of the pod, we talked about injuries. We talked about the offensive side of the ball. Let's move over to defense and let's start in the secondary, because it was certainly a lightning rod for discussion going into Saturday's game, last Saturday's game against Mercer, and coming out after giving up a couple of explosive plays for touchdowns in the second half. You talked about the statuses of Jalen Armour Davis and also Josh Job, who did not appear in week two for Alabama, the expectation that they would return to the practice field on this Monday, see how they go throughout the remainder of the week. But you also hit on the fact that Marcus Banks and Kool-Aid McKinstry were pretty damn good in their places. Now, look, Mercer's not going to sort of bring to mind, say, like 96 Florida's fun and gun when it comes to throwing the football around. But I guess the bigger point is, when Alabama had issues in that second half, it wasn't the first year starters that were primarily responsible for those.
No, I mean, I think some of it could be chalked up to miscommunication. You know, we saw Jordan Battle kind of making a case for that. And I think we're supposed to hear from, or we might not, never mind. I think we're supposed to hear from Christian Harris tomorrow. I was going to say we could get more on that from Jordan on Tuesday. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think with some moving parts, there might have been some miscommunication, and that's to be expected. And if you're going to want to have that, you're going to want it to happen in a game against Mercer. But I do think that and, you know, the explosive plays go hand in hand, and, you know, that's not something that's going to make Nick Saban happy. But I do think that with those guys being kind of pushed into those roles, you know, I thought they played well. McKinstry and Banks both had interceptions. You know, they kind of went after them a good bit, and, you know, they made some tackles, some pass breakups. That's what you want to see from those corners. And I think the secondary, I don't think it's a reason for concern. Now, if they go into Gainesville and had the same problems, then probably so. But I think they can clean that up. And if, you know, Job and Jalen Armour Davis are back in the lineup, then I think there's better communication across the board. I mean, it's worth also noting that, you know, DeMarco Helms is back in there, and that's a new face as well. So it just could be, with so many, you know, different pieces moving around, that the guys are on the same page. And, you know, it's going to be important for them to be whenever, you know, they're playing in a hostile environment. It won't be as loud for them as it will be Alabama's offense, because, you know, the crowd will be quiet for the Florida offense. But they're going to want to clean those things up for sure going into Gainesville.
Yeah, and with Mercer being what it is offensively and so much base defense on the field for Alabama, I think you could make an argument that by being in base so much, Alabama doesn't have the luxury of having a couple of its very best overall defenders on the field, because when they're in that four-man secondary, you don't have the star position out there. You don't have the money and the dime. So I would think keeping Malachi Moore and Brian Branch on the sidelines as much as possible might not be a bad approach for Florida this week, but the Gators base out of 11 personnel with three wide receivers. So as crazy as it sounds, given how explosive Florida's been through two games, might be a good thing for Alabama to get more of those guys on the field.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, too, you look at this game, and Mercer came in, and I think in their first game they rushed for almost 550 yards on the ground. And defensively, Alabama was able to really deny them from doing that. And I think for the first two games, we've seen a lot of that from Florida. You know, they've been able to get a lot of things accomplished from their run game. And, of course, having two mobile quarterbacks helps with that. So I think that aspect from this game will benefit Alabama. But you're right. I mean, getting Brian Branch on the field is important because, you know, outside of Will Anderson and the terror that he was in the preseason, I've said it before on the podcast, I don't know if I heard as much positive buzz about another defensive player as I did Brian Branch. So he's someone that is versatile. He can play every position in the secondary, and I think they want to get him on the field as much as possible. And so when you do have, you know, a lapse in communication or just a mental error in the secondary and he's not on the field, you know, you kind of put two and two together that you need your best guy out there. So that'll definitely help. And I also think that, you know, given the way that they've been able to stop the run, that's going to be beneficial, you know, going against a team like Florida.
Absolutely. It'll start on early downs and runs and quarterback runs being more a part of that for sure, even more than what Alabama saw from Derek King in the season opener. But yeah, you're able to get it to those passing situations. And whereas you typically don't think about blitzing, you know, guys like Richardson and Jones as much, maybe you do that this week because Florida, like Alabama, a lot to replace on the outside. Jacob Copeland is very capable. But if you're Pete Golding and Nick Saban, you might say, these other guys are going to have to show us something. We're going to man them up and maybe bring an extra guy in the pass rush from time to time and maybe try to get after Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson a little bit this week. Hey, let's talk about linebackers. Certainly the Will Anderson storyline, Charlie, chief among those at that position. But Drew Sanders, how about the youngster with a couple of solid plays in the win over Mercer, a couple of pass breakups, one that led to the interception by Kool-Aid McKinstry? I'd say to this point, and certainly there are bigger challenges coming as soon as this week, Drew Sanders has been about what you could have hoped he would be in place of Christopher Allen.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I think held contained really well in this game, especially with just the so much movement and motions up front that Mercer, you know, threw, you know, toward the Alabama defense. And we kind of talked about it going into the game, kind of what to expect from a guy like Drew Sanders. He is kind of that true Sam linebacker where he can get after the passer. He can be a effective rusher off the edge, but he also can drop in coverage. And those two pass breakups are indicative of that. And, you know, it was obviously very beneficial for Kool-Aid McKinstry, and he made a good read on the play, but it doesn't happen without Drew Sanders. So, I know a lot was made of the Will Anderson injury, and deservedly so. I think, you know, it doesn't take much to make a case for Will being Alabama's best player on either side of the ball. But when you have these young guys like Sanders and Chris Braswell and Dallas Turner stepping in and doing a nice job, it makes up for the loss of a guy like Chris Allen, who was obviously very effective. So, yeah, I mean, I think hats off to Drew. He played well in the game, and that's a tough first draw for a start because, you know, you're going against a team and an offense that you're never going to see this again the rest of the season. So you go back to kind of doing what you usually do the next week, but this is just, you know, they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you in terms of what you're going to see from a look standpoint. And I thought he did pretty well.
Did a nice job, I thought, in sort of diagnosing, a pass play early in the game. His first pass breakup, he checks the run and then he drops into coverage, ends up recovering quite nicely. Looks like he might give up a reception out there in the left flat, but he gets there just in time to get a hand in. So a lot of promising stuff from Drew Sanders, and obviously really need Will Anderson this week. But if the worst case scenario sort of plays out, Drew Sanders, at least with the Christopher Allen injury, has gotten a good bit of reps, including against Miami in week one. But certainly could bring Chris Braswell into this thing, Charlie, depending on how the week goes. And then once you get past Chris Braswell, if you don't have Anderson, is it King Wakuda? Is it Dallas Turner first in that next group? Where are you at that point?
Yeah, I would give the nod to the freshman. You know, we've seen him in both games. We haven't seen just a ton of King Wakuda, even though he got on the field Saturday. So, you know, it's kind of in the pecking order. You look at it, Alabama kind of updated their depth chart a little bit, and you had Dallas Turner behind Sanders at the Sam linebacker, and you had Will Anderson and Chris Braswell as the Jack. So I would go with, I mean, you know, the depth chart, obviously you take it with a grain of salt, but I would go with that. You know, it'll be interesting to see, of course, how effective Will Anderson is if he's available and in the game. But, you know, when they might want to rotate him out just because he's, you know, coming off of an injury, if we do see a little bit more of, you know, Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell. So I would give the nod to the freshman at this point. You know, things can always change, and going on the road, if they're going to want to use four outside linebackers, maybe they go with the King Makuta. But that hasn't been what we've seen up to this point.
Inside linebacker, a couple of solid performances once again from your starters, Christian Harris, Henry Toa-Toa. Good to see Toa-Toa out there after he had the injury scare there in the second half against Miami. And then you get into sort of the depth of that position. You start seeing Jalen Moody, and there's that other true freshman once again in Deontay Lawson.
Yeah, I mean, the first two inside linebackers have played well all year long, and you're right. I mean, you know, watching pregame warmups, you know, Henry Toa-Toa's right arm was just wrapped and wrapped and wrapped to protect that elbow, and that's to be expected. But you know, we heard from Henry last week. He said it was just a little sprain and nothing too serious, and it wasn't. He played in the game, and I thought both of those guys really commanded the defense and did a nice job of, you know, holding Mercer in check from a run standpoint, and the backups as well. I mean, you know, we haven't seen Shane Lee, but Jalen Moody, he looks like the guy that we were talking about in the spring as potentially being, you know, a starter. And Deontay Lawson looks like he has a really bright future. So, you know, the knock on wood, the inside linebacker position hasn't been, you know, bit by the injury bug. But you know, what we've seen from outside linebacker and then late in games from the inside linebacker position, just the depth at both of those spots is unreal. And Alabama certainly, you know, has the luxury of having just a pool of players to deal with.
Yeah. And matching up with this Florida offense, which you figure is going to be heavy on the quarterback runs and, you know, requiring some guys being able to make some plays in space, should be able to take some real comfort in knowing you got guys like Christian Harris, Henry Toa-Toa. You've got depth there very legitimately in the form of Jalen Moody. And then if Will Anderson is himself, I don't think for Florida this week, those wide open spaces are going to quite be the same that they were against Florida Atlantic and USF in the first two games of the season for the Gators. Let's go up front and talk some DL. What about Byron Young in that fast start on Saturday? Charlie, the big man, he wasted no time getting on the TFL scoreboard.
No, he didn't. And, you know, I give out game balls after each game, at least after each win. And I wrote Byron Young's name down pretty quickly, just in terms of trying not to forget about him, you know, come Sunday. And, you know, he led all defensive linemen in tackles with four. You know, he had a couple of tackles for loss, which led the team. And he had one of the three sacks in the game. So I think from, you know, you look at the junior defensive lineman that we oftentimes forget about or overlook. And Byron Young's probably the most disruptive of the bunch. And, you know, of course, with Phil Mathis and what he's been able to do from a consistency standpoint, you know, people are always wondering about, you know, a guy like LeBron Ray and his health status. And I think people were really enamored by Tim Smith last year. It's expected that some of these guys that have been in the program get overlooked a little bit. But, you know, Byron Young and DJ Dell and Justin Boydby, they continue to get lots and lots of reps. And I think they've been consistent so far this season. And yeah, I think Byron Young, again, he was explosive. And I think that defensive front, like the linebackers, had a big hand in containing Mercer in his run game.
Three sacks for Alabama in the first half of the Mercer game, all by defensive linemen, if I'm correct on that. So whereas we talk about these linebackers, and certainly they're capable of getting plenty of pressure in their own right, maybe as encouraging of a sign as you saw from the Alabama defense in an otherwise sort of ho-hum outing against an inferior opponent was seeing these defensive linemen get some pressure on the quarterback of their own. You talked about Tim Smith. Seemed like we saw him earlier, though, this week than maybe we did against Miami. And LeBrian Ray, is it possible, Charlie, that this has been sort of a target week for Alabama where he's concerned, or you still think maybe we're a little bit away from that?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was, just to give him some time, because whenever Nick Saban first revealed the injury, he called it a pretty significant groin injury. And so we've seen LeBrian, you know, go back into practice and be back on the field. We've seen him go through warmups. He traveled to Atlanta. He was on the field Saturday at Bryant-Denny, but not just doing a ton, but he's in full uniform. And I think in an emergency situation, they could probably use him, but I think it could be. You know, I'm not sitting here and telling everybody to put all their chips in on LeBrian Ray being in the starting lineup and having a productive outing in Gainesville. But
well, that's what I heard you say, Charlie. I heard you say go to Vegas and put everything on it. Now, you know, maybe you're walking. Are you walking back on that? Because I swore that's what I heard.
No, I will never tell people what to do with their money.
Hard-earned cash.
Yeah. I know there's plenty of degenerates out there, but I'm not going to be the man to steer them that way. But,
and we love them. We love them, by the way. We love you. No judging here.
I think people have been waiting for LeBrian Ray to make an impact, and maybe it is this week. So we'll see. I think it would be a big week for him to show up, no doubt.
Depth is going to be a good thing, you got to think, for Alabama in a 2:30 kickoff in Gainesville, Florida. And knowing that Mullen and that offense, they like to tempo you pretty good too. You're going to want to be able to run waves. And that could be a real determining factor in this game, because I don't think Florida, in terms of its defensive line depth, can match up with the depth that Alabama is able to roll out there, both at nose tackle and end. On a pretty consistent basis. So let's talk special teams. JoJo Earl, a big part of that. We saw him check in as the punt returner, caught a few glimpses of that potential there at that spot. What was it, two returns for 45 yards? So that's a nice start for the freshman. And we also caught kind of the equivalent, the place-kicking equivalent of Haley's Comet, where Will Reichert is concerned. He missed a field goal. He missed a kick, Charlie. I guess it was just that kind of second half, right?
Yeah, you know, starting with Will, I think maybe that is a little bit of pressure of just knowing that everybody is, you know, very well aware of how many kicks he's made in a row and how long it's been since he's missed one. So I think for that to happen in a game like this, it's almost beneficial and takes some pressure off his shoulders. It was a 34-yard kick. You know, we've talked about how he's usually money from 35 yards and in, but you know, he did go out and make a 40-yarder in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, you like to see. So I think, again, though, it'll probably be beneficial for him in the long run, knowing that he doesn't have that hanging over his head. But I think for the most part, you know, outside of the penalties, which Nick Saban said were ridiculous after the game, you've seen JoJo Earl and what he can do as a returner. And that's really where Nick Saban likened him to Jalen Waddle, is his ability as a returner, I think, is promising. You know, they saw that Mercer was just going to punt them the ball, and so they decided to try it number 10 out there. And he did what you said. He had two returns for 45 yards with a long of 29. And I think that's encouraging, just to have that threat back there again. You know, is something that Alabama likes to see. And then it was a better overall day for James Burnham, the punter. He had three punts and averaged over 43 yards a punt with a long of 44. I think he's just continuing to get more and more comfortable. And this is the first time that he's actually punted in a game. And this is a big week for him, you know, going on the road and in a hostile environment to see how he performs. So I think that'll be something I'll be watching on Saturday as well.
Yeah, Burnham's going to be kind of like, sausage, okay? And I know you're wondering exactly where the hell is Travis going with this analogy. But you know it always comes back around to food for me. You know that. Look, don't worry about how it's made. Just know you like the way it tastes, okay?
Gotcha.
So I guess what I'm saying is it probably isn't always going to look great in the air coming off of James Burnham's foot. But if he gives you 43, 44 yards per punt like he did against Mercer on a consistent basis, just know that you like the taste of that. Am I making sense with that now?
No, that makes sense, yeah. Okay. I didn't know where it was going. But.
And you know better than to ask, too. You know, Charlie, he knows this deal after all these years around me. No doubt about that. So, yeah, Burnup was a high point, and obviously Chris Braswell with the block punt. That was, you know, you didn't go into the game thinking, okay, on the list of items Alabama might need to get jump started in this game, a block punt, you know, and but that's exactly the way it happened, and it's good to know that you still have sort of that non-offensive touchdown capability other than just the defense in providing those if you need them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Ali Kaho now being at UCLA, we've seen him block a punt since he's joined the Bruins. You know, Alabama misses that on special teams, but, you know, we saw Chris Braswell do an effective job, you know, coming off of the right side of the line and blocking it, and Jace McCullough scooping it up for a score. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I didn't anticipate that being the kind of game changer for Alabama, because right after that happens, then you see Kool-Aid McKinstry pick off a pass, give the ball back to the offense, and then they start to get rolling. But it happened, and yeah, it is good to see the non-offensive touchdowns back, because it's been, what, since Smitty took a punt return back against Arkansas
last year that they've done that. Yeah, all over it. Charlie Potter's always all over it. We're all over it here on the Bama Online Podcast. If you haven't already, how about a subscription to the Bama Online Podcast? We would certainly appreciate it. It's simple as a click or two. It's absolutely free. And if you would leave us a rating and a review while you're there, that would help us out a great deal as well. So, Charlie, kind of give us the overview of the rest of the week leading up to the big matchup with the top 15 Gators on Saturday afternoon on CBS. Standard week, right? In terms of preparation, player availability, Nick Saban availability.
Yeah, I mean, it's still all the same. It'll be virtual, but we'll have, you know, a few players tomorrow. And then Wednesday will be the SEC teleconference and Coach Saban's post-practice press conference, and, you know, maybe we won't get a rant this week. He sounded in a little bit of a better mood this morning. And then Thursday is the radio show, and then after that I'll be, you know, hitting the road and going to Gainesville and, you know, taking in my first trip to the Swamp. After this, before Texas and Oklahoma join the conference, I still need to go to Kentucky.
I got you. Yeah, that's true. It's been a long time. What?
Well, I will say
2012 or so.
It was 2013 because it was my senior year, and I was supposed to go. I went to every other game that season, but they told us at the Crimson White that we could only get one seat in the press box. And I was at the time the assistant sports editor. And then, you know, I go back home and, you know, I'm watching it at the campgrounds, my sister's RV with the family, and you know, Mark Torrance, our sports editor at the time, sends me a picture, and we had two seats in the press box. So, Ass is still a little chapped about that. Kentucky, I think, is coming up pretty soon, so I can be able to knock it off here in the next year or so.
Yeah, it's a pretty fun trip up to Lexington. Usually it's a feel good trip, but Mark Stoops, even though I guess Alabama did drop, a 60 bomb on the Wildcats last season, you know, he's at least got the folks up there excited in horse racing country. But yeah, I look forward to being there with you on Saturday from Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Throughout the week, we're going to have you covered. You know, Hank South, Tim Watts. From a recruiting perspective, it's a big week. So there'll be a lot of those angles thrown around on the recruiting trail as well. We're going to have complete coverage for you at BamaOnline.com. And be sure to join us, of course, right there on the Roundtable, the premium message board of choice for Alabama fans everywhere, the Roundtable right there at BamaOnline.com. Thanks as always, Charlie.
No problem, man. It's always good to catch up.
Absolutely. For Charlie Potter, Travis Schreier, thanking you once again for joining us right here on the Bama Online Podcast. We'll talk to you again real soon.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.